Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Vedika Dada Arjuna Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Bhakta Vrinda Nitya Sartasya Sambandho
Nitya Sartasya Sambandho
Nitya Drasite Nishu
Nitya Drasite Nishu
Yavaryasahi Sambandho
Yavaryasahi Sambandho
of the eternal
Artasya
thing sambandha relationship he indeed anitya temporary drishyate is seen nishu in human society yava as long as yasya of whom he indeed sambandha relationship mamatvam, ownership, that long, eva, indeed, certainly. Translation, a few living entities are born in human species and other born animals, although born, both are living entities, the relationships are impermanent. An animal may remain in the custody of a human being for some time, and then the same animal may be transferred to the possession of another human being. As soon as the animal goes away, the former proprietor no longer has a sense of ownership. As long as the animal is in his possession, he constantly has an affinity for it, but as soon as the animal is sold, the affinity is lost. Purport, aside from the fact that the soul transmigrates from one body to another, even in this life, the relationship between living entities are impermanent, exemplified in this verse. The son of Chitraketu is named Harashoka, or jubilation and lamentation. The living entity is certainly eternal, but because he is covered by temporary dress, body, his eternity is not observed. days, Vedinosmini Tade, Homaram Jovanam Jarab. The embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, thus the bodily dress is impermanent. The living entity, however, is permanent. As the soul is transferred from one owner to another, the living entity who was the son of Chitrakirti lived as his son for some time, but as soon as he was transferred to another body, the affectionate relationship was broken. As stated in the example given in the previous verse, when one has a commodity in his hands, he considers it his, but as soon as it is transferred, it becomes someone else's commodity. Then one no longer has a relationship with it. He has no affection for it, nor does he have a net for it. Next state, even though one living entity becomes connected with another because of a relationship based on bodies that are perishable, the living entity is eternal. Actually, it is the body that is born or lost, not the living entity. One should not accept that the living entity takes birth or dies. The living entity actually has no relationship with so-called fathers and mothers. As long as he appears as the son of a certain father and mother as a result of his past fruit of activities, he has a connection with the body given by that father and mother. Thus he falsely accepts himself as their son and acts affectionately. After he dies, however, the relationship is finished. Under these circumstances, one should not falsely be involved with jubilation and lamentation. Therefore, when the living entity lives within the material body, he falsely thinks that he is the body, although actually he is not. His relation with the body and so-called father and mother are false, illusory conceptions. These illusions continue as long as one is not enlightened about the situation of the living entity. Text 9, the living entity is eternal and perishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies, yet he does not belong to the bodily category. The living being is so sublime that he is equal in quality to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy, and thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. Therefore, in this verse, the philosophy of Chinchaveda Veda simultaneously oneness and difference is described. The living entity is eternal, like the Supreme Personality of God, but the difference is that the Supreme Lord is the greatest, no one being equal to or greater than him, whereas the living entity is sukshma or extremely small. The Shastra describes that the magnitude of the living entity is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. The Supreme Lord is all-pervading. Relatively, the living entity is accepted as the smallest. There should naturally be inquiry about the greatest. The greatest is the Supreme Personality of God and the smallest is the living entity. Another peculiar characteristic of the jiva is that he becomes covered by maya, amamaya gunaya. He is prone to be covered by the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. The living entity is responsible for his conditioned life in the material world, and therefore he is described as Prabhu, Master. If he likes, he can come to the material world, and if he likes, he can return home back to Godhead. Because he wanted to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Lord gave him a material body through the agency of material energy. As the Lord itself says in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart of Arjuna and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of material energy. The Supreme Lord gives a living entity a chance to enjoy in this material world as he desires, but he openly expresses his own desire that the living entity give up all material aspirations, fully surrender to him, and return home back to Godhead. The living entity is the smallest. Jiva Goswami says in this connection that living entity within the body is extremely difficult for materialistic scientists to find, although we understand from authorities that the living entity is within the body. The body is different from the living entity. So here continues this whole discussion about the impermanence of the relationship, and the example is given of as long as we have one relationship, then we're attached to that, and we get a new body, and we become attached to the new body, and we forget about the old body. And similarly, if we have one attachment to another person, and that disappears, then we develop another attachment to another person. So the relationships we establish and the attachments are there, and they are all temporary. So the opposite is there, of course, and that is something that's permanent. So that is described here in text 9, and it describes the permanence of the Atma. So it says it is nitya, avyaya, sukshma, sarvadrik, sarvasraya. And prabhu. So it gives different
adjectives to describe this Atma. So that first term, Nitya, means eternal. Unlike the bodies and unlike the relationships between the body and objects or other bodies, the Atma is eternal. It does not perish at any point in time. It is permanent. And avyaya, which means, of course, can be indestructible, or it does not decrease, which can mean, of course, that it doesn't get old and withered, etc. So it doesn't change its nature. It always remains the same. The material body, however, changes and eventually gets old and withered and weak, and then it dies. So, therefore, the problems that are attached to our material relationships are actually because of our attachment to the body. If we're not attached to the body but we understand our spiritual nature, we don't have that problem. Because there is no death, there is no change at all. The soul is nitya and avyaya. Of course, one problem is it is sukshma. No one can see it, it is so small. So we tend to forget that we are Atma. We cannot understand the nature of Atma because of our identity with our material body. So it is very, very difficult to understand. This Atma is the cause of getting the bodies. It becomes the cause of all the bodies, so it's called Sarvasraya, the shelter of all bodies. So, which means that ultimately without the soul, the body is useless. So the body is secondary, and there's the jiva that goes from body to body. And svadrik means it sees itself, which means that its knowledge reveals itself. Objects cannot reveal themselves under normal circumstances. Fire or a flame can reveal itself. And it reveals other objects. So that's one type of matter that can do something like that. But matter cannot reveal itself to itself because it's not conscious. So Atma, because it is a knower, can reveal things like the flame can reveal things. It can also reveal itself. And it can also know itself, unlike the fire or the flame. It cannot know itself. It can reveal itself, but it cannot really know itself. It can reveal its form, but it cannot know itself. Or it cannot reveal itself to itself. So, the jiva can do that. So that is the distinction between the self-revelation of the fire and the self-revelation of the soul. The soul can reveal itself to itself. So that is the nature of a conscious being as opposed to fire, which is unconscious. The same is also the Lord. The Supreme Lord is also like that. So that's a similar nature. And like the Supreme Atma, the Supreme Lord is also Nitya and also Avyaya and also can be called Sukshma because you cannot see with the material eye. So in this way there are similarities between the Atma and the Supreme Lord. But one difference, of course, is that the Supreme Lord does not take material bodies in the same way that the jiva does. Yes, he does have bodies, but there's not a difference between the body and the Atma as there is with the jiva. So there's a difference there. Jiva is also the enjoyer of the body, controller of the body. So he has some type of control. The difference, of course, is that the Supreme Lord is also a controller, but he controls everything, all the jivas and all the bodies, all matter. The jiva, because of his nature, particular nature, creates bodies for himself in the material world. The jiva, the Supreme Lord, doesn't do that. He does not create bodies for enjoying in the material world. He has bodies, but he does not enjoy matter. He does not have material bodies. So there's a difference between the jiva and the Supreme Lord also. But there's also similarity. However, just to get rid of this illusion and all the problems involved with attachment in the material world and consequently lamentation, the first step is to understand the nature of the Atma, the Jivatma. So these qualities should be understood by a person in the material world. These qualities cannot be understood by observation in the material world. We cannot see the Atma, so we have no idea what its qualities are, like being Nitya and Avyaya, etc. So therefore, in order to understand about the Atma, we will have to go to the scriptures. So very nicely here and in other places, we have qualities of the Atma described for us. So here we have a definition of the jiva. And implicit in this definition also is the idea that there's some difference with the Supreme Lord, because the jiva takes material bodies and the Supreme Lord does not. So this is a first step, the jiva in the material world, separate from matter, but under illusion, accepting material bodies created by material energy under the direction of the Supreme Lord. So this is the cause of the misery, is the acceptance of these material bodies by the jiva. So first step is to understand, oh, I'm not actually the body, I am Atma. The second is to stop the cause. Why do I get material bodies? And identify with them. So then we have to stop that also, not simply say I'm not a material body, but we have to stop the Atma from accepting new bodies again. So technically, the process of Gyan means that when we understand the truth that I'm not the body, through that understanding we stop everything. But that's difficult to do, because simply by understanding why I'm not the body, we don't give up our attachments. So therefore, along with that, the Gyanis also have other angas like Vairagya to practice, becoming more detached from everything. And it may involve yoga practice to realize their own. So, therefore, the knowledge itself is not sufficient. One has to do other practices also to cut off that attachment to material things. So in the process of bhakti, instead of trying to stop all this attachment, instead we cultivate attachment to the Supreme Lord. So prema is defined as excessive attachment, extreme attachment to the Lord. So attachment itself is not wrong, but it has to be directed to the proper person. So if we direct it to a material person, this is problematic. This leads to these attachments in the material world. When we have the attachment directed to the Supreme Lord, this destroys all the material attachments. It destroys all karma. This has a completely opposite effect. However, the condition for that attachment is that we cannot have the idea of getting something out of the Lord for ourselves. That type of attachment is wrong. So we simply use the Lord for our enjoyment, and then we're back in the material world again. So therefore, that attachment to the Lord has to increase and consequently attachment for our own enjoyment has to decrease. If that does not take place, then the process does not work. So that is why we cultivate pure bhakti, which means we try to do things favorably for the Lord without desires for ourselves, either liberation or material enjoyment. So this is the best result from pure bhakti. We end up with complete relationship with the Supreme Lord and no material attachments at all. If we do cultivate bhakti and we do have the attachments, that is not as good, but it's better than nothing. And so therefore, in the second canto of Bhagavatam, it said that whether you have sarva kama, kama va, whether you have all material desires or no material desires, or you have a desire for liberation, you still worship the Supreme Lord. So you do karma misra bhakti or gan misra bhakti, whatever, still, it is superior to not doing bhakti at all. So that is also there. But we have to understand that the result is not the same. So what happens if we do that mixed bhakti? We also can get some result. What is the result? We can at least destroy the karmas, get out of the material world, and all that. We can do that also. However, we do not end up with the same type of relationship with the Lord in the spiritual world. Consequently, we don't have the same type of bliss. That's all. So therefore, the process of pure bhakti is the recommended process. This gives us the best result. In pursuance of that, one basis is this understanding that we're not the material body and that we are the Atman. And we understand the qualities of the Atman. So this Atman relates to the Supreme Lord, who is similar. Just as in the material world, people relate to other people because they're similar, they have similar forms. Rather than relate with snakes and animals and other things, they relate with human beings because form is very similar. Unfortunately, it's all material and it's all temporary. That is the problem. So the Atma also relates with another similar entity. So that is why there's similarity between the Lord and the Jiva, because it allows for a relationship. But then, of course, we have the difference. The Lord has all power, the Jiva has little power. The Lord is not subject to bodies and ignorance. The Jiva is subject to material bodies and ignorance, etc. So there's also a difference there. But the similarity allows a proper relationship. The difference makes that relationship one of dependence on the Lord in all cases, eternally. Jiva is dependent upon the Supreme Lord. So by nature, he is dasa, he is servant. So therefore, all relationships with the Lord, this relationship of dasa is always there. He is always subservient to the Supreme Lord by his very nature. Nevertheless, beyond that, he can establish various types of relationships. So, we can say, it is natural, because the Jiva is conscious and the Supreme Lord is conscious, natural that they have a relationship. It is unnatural for the Jiva, who is conscious, to have a relationship with a body which is unconscious, or to be attached to another body which is unconscious. It's all unlike the Jiva. So this is a conflict in the material world. A conscious entity stuck in unconscious matter, attached to unconscious matter. It doesn't in any way become satisfying for the Jiva. So the proper is to have a relationship with the Supreme Lord, conscious entity with the conscious entity. So the process of establishing the relationship is called bhakti. And perfection of that relationship is called prema. So we have to cultivate that spiritual relationship, and then it becomes fully manifest.
This material world, when we are in Grihastha Ashrama, we have to have some attachment with the family. So Because we will not be able to do the pure bhakti, maybe the karma mishra bhakti will be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what will be the ideal solution for that?
For attachment.
Well, this is to gradually work for detachment, that's all. If we continue to increase our attachments, that's not going to work. We have to strive for detachment. It will lead to pure bhakti if one gets proper association with people who perform pure bhakti.
It's not like this. Like, where the mercy happens, but it's not like
this. It doesn't naturally happen. Because one can continue to cultivate those material desires also.
And even if they know Krishna, even if they know Krishna,
yeah,
as a Supreme Lord.
Yeah. Well, if they know, then they have proper knowledge, then they can advance. But that knowledge means they should take proper association. So that's the best result of mixed bhakti, is that one gets association, then one goes to pure bhakti. Jiva is covered in the material world. So its full powers are not really manifest. It's manifest, we say, through the material body. That's how it is manifest.
And someone can argue that material nature is more powerful than
the earth.
It will cover the
atmosphere. Well, yes. In that sense, it covers it, so it's more powerful. But what is power? Because matter is not even conscious. The mountain is powerful in what way? It's inert in one sense. But this power is caused by the attraction of the jiva. If the jiva has attraction, then it gets covered. If it doesn't have attraction, it's not powerful at all. It's nothing. But it's the desire of the jiva to enjoy for himself that causes this identity with matter, etc.
But the soul is able to have a control over the matter, because matter is not conscious and it's not going to reciprocate with any sort of feelings. But whereas it is interaction with another soul, it is difficult, because it has the other soul has also some sort of feelings and reactions. So it becomes very difficult to have a sort of relationship between jivas, especially with others when we have feelings. When we have a relationship with matter doesn't have any feelings, because it doesn't have consciousness. So the jiva is able to control or conquer over that matter and have control over it.
Well, a jiva can control matter in one sense to a certain degree, according to his karma. But even that is subject to destruction, because matter all destroys, gets destroyed. Book is destroyed, table is destroyed. So we really can't control all of that. To some degree, yes. The non-enjoyment is the part that it has no consciousness. So how you can enjoy things that are not conscious when the jiva is conscious? It's frustrating. It's very different. But by illusion, we can try to get comfort from material things. Because of that lack of, or that difference, therefore, we strive to have relationships with people, because there's an atma there, or an animal, or whatever, something with a jiva in it. We try to establish a relationship with a living creature instead. But that also fails, because we confuse the jiva with the body.
Maharaj, how to differentiate between the attachment and the duty towards children and parents?
Well, duty is also some sort of attachment.
But it's recommended in the Shastra that we have...
Yeah, to some degree. But then again, the idea is to become detached ultimately, and do the duty merely of duty, finally, that's all, without attachment. If, as long as we have those attachments, then we come back in the material world. So as far as the material world is good, it maintains the material world. as far as getting out of the material world is bad, because we have to come back again if we have those attachments. Well, the relation with certain jivas may or may not depends. But ultimately, attachment is not the only thing. Karma is another thing. So due to karma, we may be stuck in a certain position in which we have no relationship with any of the people in previous lifetimes. So we may have attachments, but they may not be strong enough, and the karma may be more, so therefore we don't have relationships with those people. Sometimes because attachments are strong, then we do have relationships with people in the previous lifetimes. Could, and that says explain in this case, not necessarily them. But they could in previous lifetimes. It could be enemy in this time, they can appear in the family or whatever. Not exactly to give problems, but also to solve the problem of being an enemy.
Every atma has its own karma. Whether we are bound by family relationship or not, that the ultimate result for that atma is going to happen because of its own karma. But the aspect of attachment which comes there, is it also a part of karma?
In one sense, we have attachments from previous lifetime which carry over. It's not karma in the sense that it's a reaction to a simple activity. It's just that your vasanas from one life carry over into the next. That's right. It depends on the karma itself. Usually, if one commits sinful activities in this lifetime, then one has to wait in hell for some time before getting a body. And if you do the Shraddha rites, then it's quicker.
Is it the same case for the devotees to Maharaj?
No.
Well, when we say that the attachment is the vasana, the primary vasana what the soul should be having is the attachment to the Lord. There is a first attachment to what the soul, because being part and parcel.
No, jiva is tatashta, so you can choose one or the other.
Maharaj, when we are in the family life, we are not able to do the pure bhakti. Whether we can aspire the next life that we should have a brahmachari or sannyasi's birth so that we can do the pure bhakti to attain the prema.
Well, pure bhakti is not necessarily being a sannyasi or brahmachari, because if you're attached to that ashram, that's also an attachment. So that's why Lord Chaitanya rejected all the varnas and ashramas, because that's also an upadhi, it's an identity. But even in an ashram, if one is not attached to it, then one can also do pure bhakti. That is what was recommended, a gradual detachment by performing bhakti rather than artificial detachment.
How does the jiva to have because of our desire to enjoy separately. That is stronger.
That is deep rooted, or
yeah.
How can you uplift? I mean, more and more.
Well, by the mercy of Krishna. That's the only way.
But still, in difficulties, our natural tendency becomes to depend on Krishna to solve it.
Mm. No, well, dependency is good, but dependency not to get material enjoyment, but dependency to surrender more, that's all.
Vandana Shri Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Kusala Shri Maharaj ki jai.